afternoon.
Hey, how are you?
Welcome to... There we go. Welcome to sound in my ears. Welcome to We the People Radio. My name is Aaron Ryan.
And I'm Bill Cundiff.
And our sponsor this hour...
is Team Power. Team Power's our local
John Deere. Tell us a little about Team Power, Bill.
They're a local John Deere Kubota tractor dealership up there on Twin View Boulevard, just south of Phil's Propeller. And they're everything tractors up there. You need a tractor, an implement. You need something worked on. They can do it up there at Team Power. They're at 3119 Twin View, and their phone number is 226-9226. Give them a call or catch them on the web at readingtractors.com. They're the experts.
There you have it.
There you are.
All righty.
Oh, you know what? Before we go too much further, too, I just want to call out that we have a special...
Because you don't like shout-out.
I'm not going to
You're going to actually just change
that.
The word, use the same expression?
Yeah, I'm not going to use that term. But we have a very special sponsor up in the...
Ooh, good call.
Up north of us here that sent us... a rather large, what would you call it?
Donation toward the...
Toward the radio show,
toward the program.
And I want to thank that person very, very much. They want to remain anonymous, but thank you very much for the
donation.
Yeah,
but her name's Karen.
Yeah, her name's Karen. Yeah.
Okay, we'll leave it at
Karen.
That. There's a lot of people named Karen between here and the Canadian border.
Oh,
it could be anyone.
True. That's true. But,
except for the three of us in this room.
Yeah.
Couldn't be us.
Yeah. Thank you, Karen, very much.
That was awesome.
That was awesome.
Especially since... you know, our funds have been rerouted. It's like a conspiracy.
Yeah,
the washing machine can't get it fixed. Sears, rather than send me a part, is...
I'm going to send you a brand new washing machine, because that's easier.
Because they can't figure out how to send me a part. Bizarre.
Yeah, very bizarre.
And then the washing machine secretly was talking to the air conditioner while we were gone, and got home Friday night when it's, 106 or whatever, and the air conditioning doesn't work.
Yeah. So when you don't have any other alternative form of cooling your home down, your other option is to move out until they fix it.
And that's away.
That's what we had to do the last couple of days. So, yeah, it's been a challenge. But, hey, if anybody does want to sponsor the show, how do they do that?
Let's see. You can go to wethepeopleradio.us, click on the sponsor tab. That gives you some information. And actually, I've set it up so that people could, kick in $10 if they want. They can put in a little bit every month. You've got a lot of options.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, we've got folks that every month send us a check, just automatic check, and that's great. We really appreciate
Lynn,
that.
Thank you for that.
Yeah, Lynn.
And it just takes, the bite out of it, because we do, we have to pay for the airtime, because, obviously we could say almost anything, and we have to be held totally responsible for that. That
that's
costs
right.
money.
That's right. And it's very risky to have us on the air.
I can't possibly relate the entire disclaimer, because it's too long.
That's right. But we are the responsible parties.
But it does amuse us every time we hear it.
Yeah.
And it makes us feel like we might be doing something bad.
Which is good.
Yeah, which is awesome. So today we have Dr. Harry Booyans with us again. And so for those of you that are like, are they talking about South Africa again? I got to tell you, nobody's complaining. Every time we talk about South Africa, the listenership just...
skyrockets.
Oh, yeah, blows up. So this is a huge topic of interest, and I don't remember which program it was, but he was telling us some things about President Obama while he was in office, and what that looked like from the perspective of people who either live in or come from South Africa and have affiliation there. So anyway, he had told us all this stuff. Tuesday night, I'm driving home from Siskiyou County, and I'm listening on the satellite to Obama speaking in South Africa. And I thought, oh my gosh, he's saying all the same stuff. Get home, open the email. The email says, told you so.
Yeah, Harry was listening.
I was like, I think he heard the speech too. So we thought we would do that today, and I did pick out a few fun songs that we didn't play while he was president, but we could play now that he's not president. So in case we ever re-air this, it's July of 2018, because I know we've re-aired shows from 2016 and 2018, and people were all pissed we were capping on the president. But it was really during a different term. So anyway... at the point we're recording this, Donald Trump is the president. Oh, all the liberals' heads just exploded.
Yeah, you said it. You said the word.
And Obama's out of office. Yay, all the conservatives are cheering. So we're kind of one-sided. Yeah. We're not fair and balanced here. And we don't care.
No.
Actually.
No.
There's enough fair and balance in the world.
I don't want to.
Yeah, you know what? I don't want to either. And you know what? We were really hot yesterday and sweaty. Yes. So you know what? Today we can do whatever we want.
And you know what? It's only supposed to be 109 this coming week.
I'm so excited.
Yeah. You know, we have to enjoy the cooler weather today. I don't know if it's going to hit 100.
Sure, it's probably hotter in South Africa and we're complaining.
That's
so we'll
true.
Stop now.
Yeah, okay.
Although we do only live 2 miles from the sun.
Never mind.
We called this show The Real South Africa. Obama is fanning the flames of white genocide, which should give you an idea of what you're going to listen to. So if you don't like that, you should probably change the channel. But I think you're going to like it, and it'll be interesting. So Harry Buyans is an internationally recognized, I'm going to read the little bio that he hates. He's a multiple award-winning PhD defense and aerospace physicist. So he's not just anybody. He's originally from South Africa with a 360-degree bloodline in that country, and he currently lives with his family outside Vancouver, Canada. And he's a scientist, so he's all big on facts. So this isn't all just opinion and, you know, talking head stuff. He actually has done all the research, and he comes from there. So without further ado, we have him on either phone or Skype or something. We have him on phone, so we hope he can hear us.
How's it? Indeed, I can hear you, Aaron.
Nice. No one says they can't hear me.
And Skype, which decided to collapse the moment you called me. I don't know why that is. I think my system is allergic to you, possibly.
Oh, I think our air conditioner and washing machine were talking to your computer.
I hear the distinct sound of Skype reviving itself in the background.
Oh, yeah, I hear the little water sounds. Well, maybe maybe before we get too far down the road, we'll get it.
Take a shot at Skype again. We can try and make it work.
Yeah, maybe at the next break we'll give it another round.
Nice.
And see if we can do that.
And you know, before I forget, I wanted to tell people the email that I was referencing you sent me. I put it on the website. So if somebody wants to read that, we're not going to read it to you. But if you would like to read that, and I'm going to attach some other information that he also sent me. Some we may discuss, and some we may run out of time. But that is all on there for you to read. So where would you like to start? We got a couple minutes before the first break, but you can kind of give them a flavor of where we're going to go.
Well, I'm struggling a little bit to hear on the phone, Aaron. It's incredibly soft. But
terribly sorry.
I think you asked me where do we want to go. Well, you told me to maybe address the matter of President Obama to some degree.
Yes, please.
And I jotted some notes down here, and my comment to you would be, you cannot understand the phenomenon called Barack Obama II unless you understand Nelson Mandela, something about South Africa, and something about Kenya. Because all of that goes into the mix, and the problem is that you had a president who was physically born in Hawaii. I accept that. He was formed as a human being in Hawaii and in Indonesia, and I intend to prove to you in Africa. So if he was physically born in Hawaii, he was essentially psychologically born in Kenya. I don't contest his birth certificate in the least. But to understand why I make those comments, at the risk of sounding like an idiot when I make them, you're going to have to understand the formative background behind him, and that takes you to a little village called Kohelu in Kenya and to South Africa at the end of the 1970s, because that's where he recorded, that's where his inspiration came from. He said so. It's not me, it's his words. And to understand that, you're going to have to know just a little bit of history. And unfortunately, most Americans know pretty much zero about history in Africa. So I was hoping you guys would bear with me this morning if I sketched some of that, because a lot of this will make no sense without it.
All right. Before we start that, let's take a quick break so we don't have to jam you up. And we'll try Skype while we're we're celebrating capitalism here for just a couple of minutes. We'll be right back. You're listening to We the People. You can join us online at wethepeopleradio.us. No, play our song. It's not playing. No, that was a fun song. There it is.
just all gather round, and they gazed in wide wonder at the joy they had found. The head nurse spoke up, said, "Leave this one alone." She could tell right away that I was bad to the bone. Bad to the bone. Bad to the bone. Bad.
Yeah. Yeah, you're bad, all right.
That's what they were singing in Hawaii.
Yeah, yeah. That's right.
Yeah.
All right, we're back. And Harry, can you hear us?
Okay, you're back on the air.
There we go.
There we are. Yeah, you're coming in loud and clear.
Either had drum beats or sounds of a struggle. I wasn't sure which. We were worried about you there for a second.
Yeah, I think you had a bit of George Thorogood back there.
Yeah, we did. Couldn't get started on this topic without playing Bad to the Bone. Seemed appropriate.
Okay. So I don't know how much you could hear of what I said earlier.
Oh, we got it all.
Oh, yeah, it was loud. Yeah.
Okay. So let's see. Maybe I should just go through. It's like a little litany of 9 points, which I would call the drop-dead important historical facts about South Africa. And I'm probably going to hammer these because folks don't know them. And the points are that when the Dutch settled the Cape of Good Hope in 1652, the nearest black people were 700 miles away. Secondly, it took 2 generations until 1702 before white people met black overland for the first time, about 600 miles east of Cape Town. It took 5 generations before people clashed the first time, around about the same area. The next important point is no indigenous black South African person was ever enslaved by any white man from anywhere. Not by the Portuguese, not by anybody. The next point is that it's actually the white South Africans, not the black South Africans, whose ancestors were slaves of the Dutch. And I'm a good example. I have a West African slave ancestor, and I'm supposed to be a lily white guy. The indigenous Cape population were the Khoi and the San people. They are not black people of Africa. They are the Khoi and the San, okay? Historically known as the Hottentot and the Bushmen. Since 1814, the white people in South Africa have had no right of return to Europe, unlike the colonial Portuguese, British, or French. So today's young Afrikaner, it's his great-great-great-great-grandfather was the last man with any right to a life elsewhere. Now, I don't want to keep harping on the South African history. That's pretty much all we need to know for today's discussion. The point is, my ancestors have been in South Africa, my European ancestors have been there since 1652, or at least my own precise ones since 1657. They came 5 years after the initial guys. Now, that's rather different from the fact that in the late 1800s, the British went and colonized East Africa. Okay, that's more than 200 years later. So what you need to understand is that there was a thing called the Berlin Conference in the early 1880s, I think it was. And at the Berlin Conference, a whole bunch of guys, the United States was actually invited, did not attend. But the European powers got together around a table in a smoke-filled room, and under the leadership of the well-known Bismarck, they decided how they were going to partition Africa. And each of those countries then had the right to go in there and take the piece of the so-called cake that they wanted, and with it, the people who lived there. It was as a result of that effort that Britain went into East Africa and colonized places like Kenya and Uganda. And the Germans got Tanzania, which is just south of it. Back then it was called German East Africa, Deutsch Ostafrika, later called Tanganyika, and today called Tanzania. It is immediately south of Kenya along the coast. And I wonder if you could bear with me while I just shut the phone down because it's disconnected.
Oh, sure.
Okay, there we go. All the buttons are pressed. So the picture that you need to have is, at the southern tip of Africa, this collection of people who are remarkably like the Americans, their closest cousins, and I've dwelt on that repeatedly, so we can go back there even when you want. But for all practical purposes, your closest cousins on Earth, at the southern tip of Africa, never having had anything to do with direct African slavery, we left that to other people, like the British. We left it to all those who wish to wash their hands in public these days. And life went on, and it was more than 200, it's more like 240 years later, Europe made a beeline for Africa. The Germans took German East Africa and German West Africa, respectively Tanzania and Namibia. They also had a country in the Bight of Benin. In other words, there where the Africa's coastline bends from north-south to east-west. So they had, I think, Togo is where what they took, if I remember correctly. The Italians were in the north around Libya and places like that, and in northern Ethiopia. The French were all over the heart of Africa. The Belgians took the Congo, which is where the book The Heart of Darkness comes from. And so you need to have a picture where along the east coast of Africa, there's Ethiopia, and below it is Somalia, and then Kenya, and then Tanzania. That Kenya was now British by the end of the 19th century, the beginning of the 20th century. Kenya was British, and below it, Tanzania was German. And far in the south, at the southern tip of Africa, was South Africa, now populated with your closest cousins who had been there since the 1650s. Nothing to do with attempts to colonize Africa or anything like that. Now, in the 1800s, our guys in South Africa fought two wars against British colonialism at exactly this period when the Brits decided that they are going to help partition up Africa. They tried to take the old Boer farmer republics, those ranching republics, and amazingly, they got beaten in the first one. So the guys got their independence back, but Britain didn't like that idea at all, so they started a second one in 1899. So here are your cousins at the southern tip of Africa fighting colonialist imperial Britain in order to retain independence, at first winning and then in the second round losing. Way up further north in Africa, in Kenya, there was nothing much like that. They sat there. They were now occupied by the British. Now, history moves forward, and in the 20th century, the earliest Obama we know of was born in Kenya, in the vicinity of Lake Victoria. And so was the second one, whose name was Barack Obama the First. So he was born on the shores of Lake Victoria, and in a village called, he was baptized in a village called Kogelo, or Kogelo, depending on whose pronunciation you want. And that's where the connection comes in, because this gentleman, this would be the second Obama that we trace, or otherwise known as the first Barack Obama, he applied for a scholarship, and he was helped. I just want to make sure that I get all the names nicely and correct here. He was helped by the man who would later be the Minister of Justice of Kenya, namely Tom Mboya. Now, the kind of stuff I'm talking about here is a subject that retired Brits would know about. They would more likely be conservative, and their sons are probably screaming liberals trying to make up for what they thought daddy got wrong. You know the story about why the
the father, the son argues against the father, but the father was a son once, so he argued against the grandfather. And so the world goes through these cycles, right? Where the grandson does, but the grandfather did. Okay. So now, at this point, I've now done synoptic South African history. Let me go to the synoptic Kenyan one. Kenya was occupied by the Brits in the late 19th century. They slowly tamed the highland area, which was a good agricultural country. And in fact, some South Africans went and settled there. In fact, some Boyan's family members went to Kenya and settled there as farmers. The Brits were inviting people to settle there. And it is there that Teddy Roosevelt found some of my wife's ancestors. They had gone there to settle and farm, and he was quite complimentary about them and said that they make excellent settlers, they know what they're doing with farming, they have many kids, and all that kind of stuff. So your president went there to hunt, and he met these guys of mine and my wife's, and in fact, he sang them a little tune that he knew from, from his mother's knee, so to speak. And I read he wrote it in his book, so I read that to my own mother. So this is me, Harry, speaking. I read those words to my mother, and she recognized the tune. Because Roosevelt said that the South African families up in Kenya actually recognized that. So life carried on. And then after the Second World War, with Europe now having beaten itself up, Churchill was very instrumental in making sure that that Germany got beaten to a pulp. In the process, Britain managed to get itself beaten to a pulp, and America had to save everybody from themselves. So you called it the Marshall Plan. Everybody forgets that Britain was also a benefactor of the Marshall Plan. When that kind of stuff happened, it was pretty obvious to colonized people all over the world that if ever there was a time to strike back, this was it. And that is why you saw all these independence things happening in Vietnam, with all that entailed in the end, India, the splitting up of the place into India and Pakistan, the Egyptians under Nasser, who said he's going to nationalize the Suez Canal, which Britain had controlled for a century, and the same happened all over Africa. Now, this independence or freedom movement in Africa got traction in the 1950s and came to fulfillment in the 1960s in most of so-called Black Africa. So call that Africa south of the Sahara, if you wish. South of the Sahara and north of the Zambezi. The Zambezi River is the northern limit of what used to be Rhodesia and is now Zimbabwe. So in the 1950s, Britain went through a process. I'm not sure how to describe it. I think it's called sticking your tail between your leg, running like hell, but trying to keep the quorum and wear a fluffy hat in the process.
Is that a hyphenated thing? hold on for 1 second. We've got to take another quick break, and we'll be right back. Our guest is Harry Boyens. He is a resident of South Africa for many, many years, and give us some good insight today. We'll be right back. We are back with our guest, Harry Booyans, and I'm posting your blog post right now, actually. I wasn't able to do it earlier. The connection I had at the hotel was so darn slow, I couldn't even get the page to come up. I couldn't get our own web page to come up.
Could I ask which one that is, Aaron?
The blog post that you sent me?
Yeah.
A white African and a black American.
Oh, the latest one.
Yeah, okay. The one today. You emailed it to me, but I couldn't get it online because I couldn't get there from here.
Yeah, that was rather an experience for me.
Why is that?
Well, I think at one point in that post I say that within a stretch of 1 hour, I and my own white folks back in South Africa were prayed for by a black church minister, American black church minister. Then I went on stage, delivered a talk of the same ilk as what I'm doing at the moment. It would have got me tarred and feathered or worse in the U.S. just 5 years ago. And then I walked off the stage and I was approached by my original sworn enemy who came to offer support.
Wow. Turn around for you.
Go make sense of that.
Okay, so, yeah, coming off the stage, I met Sonny Pazikas, who is a very impressive Russian gentleman. With a history in the military, works in security, as he describes it. And he told me, Harry, you did exactly the right thing to show these folks what these actual farm murders truly look like. Yeah. Because some of the folks who saw the talk were clearly extremely upset. And I'd worried about that because I would have told everybody, make sure the kids don't see this. Make sure the ladies don't see this. This is not the stuff one normally sees in life. But folks don't believe us as to what's happening. You know, what can you do? All I told them was what I'd already told you guys on the radio, which is just go to Google Images, to Google Images and just put in the word farm murder or farm attacks. And see what you get. If that doesn't rattle you to your core, I don't know what will.
Yeah, because it is stunning. And for the people
horrific.
Who maybe haven't heard the earlier shows, I did post those. We started with the history of the Dutch on May 27th of 2018. Then we talked about the farm attacks specifically on June 3rd, 2018. And then we kind of talked about the politics of the attempt at this point to basically exterminate whites in South Africa, and we did that on June 10th of 2018. So those links are there, and the links to Google Images and all that. So if you're, you know, don't have a pen in hand and you want to figure that out, go to wethepeopleradio.us, go on, you know, today's show, which is July 22nd, and you'll find all those links there, and you can get the rest of the backstory. Because we can't, you know, obviously every time we do a show, we can't redo all the other shows, just run out of time.
Yeah.
So we were on the story on the occupation, I guess, of South Africa and Kenya, and I was going to ask you the reason everybody was sectioning up Africa was to exploit the natural resources. Is that right?
That was the basic idea. You see. Old King Leopold of Belgium had really been, he was the original. He was the guy who said, man, I want myself a piece of Africa. And then he got to, I can't remember exactly who were all the guys who went and did the exploration. But he essentially got himself the colony of what is today Zaire or the Congo. With all that followed from that. And then when everybody saw that, okay, so here's the king of Belgium, of all places, and he's cutting himself a big swath of Africa, the rest decided, hell no, we got to have a piece as well.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so imagine Europe sitting in a smoky room deciding how they're going to partition up North America. And then they rush in, and some of them attack via, the coast of Georgia. Other ones hit the New York coast. Other ones come in via the Caribbean. And yet other ones attack via California. And they march on land. They plant flags. And they announce that they own the place. And the whole damn place is just sectioned up like that, right? And then doesn't matter who's living where. They just put a fence up and they say, okay, well, you guys over there and your closest cousins over here are on the other side. One lot is now our subjects, the other lot are your subjects. Doesn't matter. Okay, welcome. You are now occupied. You are a colony. Please mm-hmm. see us. Okay? And that's basically what happened. And that is why it's one of the reasons why there's so much trouble in Africa. Is go and take a look at how many straight lines there are. You can thank the Brits for that.
Yeah, there aren't any.
Those borders, you know, it's just it's unbelievable, the temerity of it. But anyway, or I don't know whether it's temerity or audacity, probably both. But so by the 1950s and early 60s, the Brits were in abject full retreat. It was something of a strategic rout. I don't think there's another word for it. They ran. And they ran with their tails between their legs. They couldn't maintain the so-called colonies of theirs. They wanted out. A handful of years before, they begged people to emigrate there and go settle there. And within 3 or 4 years, they had turned 180 degrees in the wind. And they were telling them, sorry, we've just sold you to these indigenous guys who have been attacking you. So lots of British immigrants had ruined their lives in Britain to move to Kenya, only to be told, actually, guys, go back.
Right. But they had the option at that point to go back to England. I mean, they were still able to do that.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And this is the point I've been trying so hard to
right.
make people, is that even Portugal, who had been the original colonizer of Africa, I mean, they took little patches of Mozambique, which is south of Tanzania, north of South Africa, south of Tanzania. And they took Angola, which is north of Namibia. They took little patches along the coast and then traded with the black people along that coast for slaves. That's where they got their slaves, Mozambique and Angola mostly. In fact, the way I understand it, most black people in the Americas, North and South, are probably descended from the Ovambundu tribe in southern Angola. And the Ovambundu actually enter history in a fascinating way later in what is known as the Battle for Africa. I got to pick the story back up where the Brits are getting out of Africa as fast as their legs can carry them while they pretend to have a stiff upper lip. And a plume on the head. These governor generals of theirs always had these funny hats with these plumes and things.
Mm-hmm.
And they have this reverse gunboat diplomacy. You know, they historically their gunboat diplomacy was to ride sail a boat up a river and shoot up a couple of people. Now they were sailing the boat up the river to collect their governor general so they can get him out of there as fast as they could. And so the Brits left, but it was a mess. In Kenya in particular, during the 1950s, there was an uprising, and it was called the Mau Mau Uprising. Now, I could quote you from many, many, many British sources what that was like, but I thought it would be much better to quote a black Kenyan author, because I wouldn't trust the Brits on that score, and so I don't think anybody else would. So let's hear what a Kenyan author, Bethwel Allan Ugot, said. The Mau Mau fighters, contrary to African customs and values, assaulted old people, women and children. The horrors they practiced included the following: decapitation, general mutilation of civilians, torture before murder, bodies bound up in sacks and dropped in wells, burning the victims alive, gouging out of eyes, splitting open of the bodies of pregnant women. This is a Kenyan black author who wrote this. Okay?
So you can kind of count on it. I mean, it happened.
It happened. This is the point I'm trying to make. Right. If you read the British, they're less dramatic in their statements, but we know the Brits know how to underplay everything. So the Brits actually locked up, incarcerated, found guilty, prosecuted Jomo Kenyatta as being the supposed leader of that effort. Now, Jomo Kenyatta would later become the president of Kenya.
He was the leader of the Mau Mau uprising.
They claimed he was the leader.
Okay. We've got to take one more quick break, but we definitely want to pick it up right here.
Okay.
At what happened at that point.
So we always get distracted.
I know it.
and we are talking about Obama in the next... next segment. All right, we'll be right back. You're listening to We the People. Join us online, wethepeopleradio.us.
To my records all day, with big ambitions of when I could play. My parents taught me what life was about, so I grew up the type they warned me about.
And there Obama. You go. And there Obama. You go. That's the intro for Barack Obama.
That one I missed. So,
you guys
are cutting the sound off. I can't hear the music.
Oh,
I want to hear the music too.
That's wrecking it. Darn it! I'll have to send it to you because that's a good one.
So we were at the arrest of the Mau Mau leader by the British,
yes.
Or supposed
yes.
Mau Mau
Way
leader.
Way to keep focus, Bill.
Yeah, we want to stay on the story.
And here we go. Here's the point. Obama's grandfather was imprisoned by the British for ties to the Mau Mau insurrection in Kenya. Okay?
Mm-hmm.
And when Obama went to Kenya, which I think the first time was in the 1990s as a younger guy, he found all that documentation. And you can, there's some excellent YouTube video of him talking to a huge Kenyan audience and telling about them about his experience as he went through his grandfather's paperwork. Okay? And he found all the stuff. So his grandfather was imprisoned by the Brits for ties to the Mau Mau.
Now, the Mau Mau were socialists?
Yeah, focus, Harry, focus. Let me put it this way. The isms of the white man don't count for much in Africa. They have their own isms.
Right.
And there is a thing that people will call African socialism. And it's based on the idea that the chief is the guy that holds sway over property, and he will dole it out to the tribal members. Okay?
Mm-hmm.
It's not quite the same thing as state nationalization the way that the Russians ran communism or the Chinese. But people equate the things, but they're not really the same because the African-ism contains other things as well, like animism. And it showed during... It comes out pretty quickly. You know, very recently, one of the South African parliamentarians yelled that this Christian stuff has nothing to do with them. Okay?
Mm-hmm.
That's from people who are supposedly converted Christians. So you need to understand that Africa has its own isms, and some of them seem to have a partial overlap with communism. It's probably better to just call it African socialism or tribal socialism. Historically, you can go pretty much anywhere in the world. There's not too much the history of private property ownership is a relatively short one. Let me put it that way. Very much associated with the West. So that was the first thing. Now, the other point I would like to make, and I'll tie them together, is that Barack Hussein Obama II, in other words, the man who became the president, he's a real African-American in that he is descended from an actual African father and an American mother. Other black Americans are just that, namely Americans who just so happen to be black. And I've said before, if people have a problem with them on that score, I would call those people racist.
But they can surely trace their roots back to Africa.
They can trace their roots back to Africa, but how many black Americans do you know that would be able to tell you that they descended from an Igbo guy or from a Hausa guy, or that they know for a fact that their ancestor who arrived in America was Bantu or Nilotic or wherever? They usually can't do that.
No.
And that's because they associate culturally 100% completely with America.
Yeah. Their ancestors came from Detroit.
Yeah, my grandpa was from Detroit. You know, big deal. Hey. They don't think in terms of where they come from in Africa. They don't know. And it's like Oprah, who thought that she was descended from a Zulu. Okay? People were very quick to point out to her that the Zulu were never enslaved.
Oops,
exactly. You know, so you get people who want to BS on the score. And but I'm talking about real, ordinary, decent black Americans. They have little, if any, idea of their own tribal origins. But Barack Obama knows his father was a Luo tribesman from the shores of Lake Victoria. That's where he was born.
Mm-hmm.
Now, the Luo are a Nilotic people, Nile people. Sounds funny if you say Nilotic. They are the people of the Nile. They are not the same anthropological grouping as the people further south in Africa. They presumably did mix with them, etc., but they are the same people as those who live in South Sudan, in parts of Ethiopia, and in parts of Uganda. The largest number of them live in Kenya. In Kenya, they're the third largest grouping. Okay? And the language they speak is called Doluo, but I mean, that's just like a prefix. You know, it's the Do is just a prefix, Doluo. So there's no doubt as to the ancestry of ex-President Barack Obama. His father was a Luo guy from Kenya. Okay, that's like the same way in which Jacob Zuma will tell you that as president of South Africa, he's descended from a Zulu guy who lived in Zululand. There's no confusion there. Okay, but that's completely different from any black American I've ever met. So, now, his father, Barack Obama's father, Barack Obama I, his stint in the United States from 1959 until some distance into the 60s was sponsored by the African American Students Foundation. That thing had offices on Park Avenue, New York, and also in Nairobi, Kenya. So that's how he got apparently he got to America on his own steam, but they then sponsored him from there. As far as I can tell, around about late 1961, the following individuals were on the board of directors of that organization. Julius Nyerere, the future communist president of Tanzania. Kenneth Kaunda, the future president of Zambia. And Tom Mboya, Kenyan African activist and later Minister of Justice of Kenya. Those are some family connections there.
Yeah, that's a power base there.
That's the power base. Okay? Now, that's it with the Africa connection, except to say that folks really ought to get onto YouTube and just put in there Obama Kenya and start listening to ex-President Obama. I guess I shouldn't say ex. Listen to President Obama when he visits Kenya. Listen to him speak. What you are hearing is the voice of a man who is explaining how his family went through the British colonial period, what happened to them. That's his calibration. Then he takes that and he immediately reflects it onto my own original South Africa, which was never part of that.
Yeah, that's totally unrelated.
Totally unrelated, okay? But nevertheless, I guess he can do that if he so pleases. It's just that he makes wrong conclusions and then people die.
Oh, that's all.
You know, I hate to do this. We have to take a break. But that is the crux of the issue, is his connection with, and I think a lot of people in America don't, I don't know, identify Africa as these separate, totally separate histories of different countries in Africa. They tend to group it all together and say,
"Yeah, Africa is like one big place, like the United States."
You're from Africa.
Guys,
you're...
1 month ago, a superb gentleman at a dinner table in Spokane, Washington, leaned over to me, wonderful gentleman, and he said, "Harry, are there countries in Africa?"
There you go.
Whoops.
Yeah. There you go. And I think that's a pretty popular thought that we all know that there's different countries, but they're all the same.
But I don't think people think, like, when they think of Libya, they think of Libya as being, like, floating in the ocean alone.
Yeah.
They don't realize it's part of the continent. And it's funny because whenever you speak, I always have a map of Africa in front of me, just so that when you reference all these places, I can see how close they are, because I forget.
Guys, like, you know, here's the equivalent. I really want to tell you how angry the United States makes me because of how you are running Venezuela.
You know? Yes.
That's the equivalent.
Okay.
And when we come back, we're definitely getting into, now that we're at the point where we can talk about Obama's speech down there last Tuesday and what that means for us and what he's talking about. We'll be right back with our guest, Harry Bouillons. You're listening to We the People. Join us online, wethepeopleradio.us. Good afternoon, and welcome back to the second hour of We the People Radio. My name is Aaron Ryan.
And I'm Bill Cundiff, and our sponsor this hour is Team Power.
Look at you, like, cut me off at the pass.
Look at you, just ruined it. I'm not going to say it now.
That's the part where you just look at me and don't talk.
Yeah.
Except you forgot.
So Team Power is our sponsor this hour. They're the local John Deere Kubota tractor dealer. And you can find them at 3119 Twinview Boulevard in Shasta Lake City. Just parallel in I-5 up there, just south of Phil's Propeller.
Well, they have a big new sign, too, so if you're driving on the freeway,
oh yeah,
take a gander at that.
Go up there at night. We just put a new sign up. That thing will blow your socks off. Their phone number up there is 226-9226, and they can do tractor repairs. They can set you up with a new tractor. Every once in a while, we get used tractors in there, but they are very scarce.
Lots of mowers,
yeah. We do it all. And
RTVs.
Yeah, go online at readingtractors.com.
Or drive by and peer through the fence on Sunday.
Yeah, and yeah, that's okay. So, readingtractors.com, and there's lots of models and pricing and financing and all that stuff on that site. So go see them, and it's Team Power. So I'll hand it back over to Miss.
This is helpful.
Interrupt me a lot over here. Yeah, thank you for all the help.
I was just adding
really
little things in the background.
Yeah, you're so helpful. What would I do without you?
I don't know. You'd be lost.
I know.
You'd be sitting in a hotel room by yourself.
Yeah.
Waiting for your air conditioner to get fixed. Mm-hmm. At least you have company.
Yeah.
You can thank me for that.
Mm-hmm.
Lord knows I'm entertaining. All right.
Yeah.
Hey, it's not for everyone. Didn't you listen to the disclaimer?
That's right. And by the way, we're not for entertainment purposes only.
Yeah, it's for education purposes with a little bit of foolishness.
That's right.
All right. So, back to our guest. This hour is a continuation, obviously, of multiple shows that we have done. Our guest, Harry Buyens, is an internationally recognized, multiple award-winning PhD defense and aerospace physicist. He's originally from South Africa with a 360-year bloodline from that country, and he lives with his family on the forested slopes outside of Vancouver, Canada. And so we have him Skyped in today, and we've also listed the previous programs that we have done with him, and I hope you will go back and take a listen. You can find all of that at wethepeopleradio.us.
Yeah.
In addition to our contact information and sponsorship information and all that good stuff. And so if you have ideas or suggestions or things you'd like to hear about or, topics or guests, please email or call us.
What kind of instigated this whole thing was our previous president, Barack Hussein Obama's speech in South Africa. Was it last week?
And yes, Tuesday.
The first hour we talked about his connections and family history. And now we're going to elaborate.
Talk a little bit more about what he said.
Yes.
It's very telling. And it's things that a lot of Americans always thought, but I don't know, if you talked about it, you were a hater. And it's interesting, but a lot of that is coming out now. So we'll shut up, get back to our Skype guest, Dr. Harry Buyens.
All righty.
No pressure.
I've explained the map of Africa, that South Africa is stuck at the bottom, and not to be confused with Kenya, who's in the north, and to the very nice gentleman who asked me the question the other night in Spokane. Indeed, Africa has many different countries, and I could only be held accountable for one out of about 50, and that would be the one stuck far in the south. We've talked about Kenya and some of the history there. Perhaps what I should do is jump forward immediately to the speech and pull out a couple of things from the speech and then go back from there to qualify those or explain those. So I wrote you an email in which I said, what did I tell you? Mm-hmm. Today, Obama delivered the annual Mandela speech. Now, the reason why I prefaced it with what did I tell you is because I have maintained from day one, from 2008, that Obama is inspired by Mandela. He's all about Mandela. He's all about Africa. He's not about America. Okay? He's about Africa. And I shouldn't say he's not about America. I'm saying he's inspiration is Africa. His inspiration is not Martin Luther King. You guys need to understand that. His inspiration is people like Jomo Kenyatta and Nelson Mandela.
Because he knows that history.
And he knows that history.
Yeah.
It's his family's history. Mm-hmm. He went there and he wallowed in it.
Right.
Literally, he went there, he dug through his grandfather's paperwork, he looked at his grandfather's passbook that the British issued him. He lamented about the fact that his grandfather had fought for the British in Burma and had come back and had been treated like a dog, which is probably true. Okay. He talked about how it even listed the missing teeth his grandfather had. What he did neglect, though, is to mention that Luo tribesmen, as their initiation process, have six of their front bottom teeth removed anyway. So I don't know if that's what the passbook referred to. But we won't get into that kind of detail.
The point is he grew up in that culture. He knows that political system and culture
and
very
for all
well.
The people who think that Nelson Mandela was a great guy, you might want to listen to some of the previous programs.
Here's the bit that folks need to get about their previous president. He was born in Hawaii. I think you'll forgive me, and the people of Hawaii will forgive me if I say they're not exactly representative of Kansas, Nebraska, or West Virginia, or Montana. Okay? Hawaii is not exactly fly-over country. It's fly-to country.
Yeah.
And so after that, he ended up in Indonesia, which is, again, not exactly Ohio. Okay? And then eventually he came back to California, which is on the loony left end of the country.
Don't we know it?
And I don't have to tell you anything about that. You know the calibration over there. And he ended up at Occidental College in I think that's in L.A. And here is how he phrased it in his speech the other day in South Africa. Now, it's significant that he would be invited to give the Mandela speech because people in Africa know he's inspired by that. They don't have confusion. It's Americans who have the confusion. You voted for him for president. And I bet you that of the 330 million people in the United States, if 1,000 had this background, it would be many. But they voted for him. He wrote, or he stated, this is the recording by, what's it called, National Public Radio. This is the actual transcript. He stated, "Madiba's light shone so brightly even from that narrow Robben Island cell that in the late 1970s he could inspire a young college student on the other side of the world to re-examine his own priorities. Let it be known that this is before he went to Africa to find his father's roots." Okay?
Mm-hmm.
Then he said, "When later as a law student I witnessed Madiba emerge from prison just a few months, you'll recall, after the fall of the Berlin Wall," there's actually a connection. The Berlin Wall fell and that's why South Africa decided Mandela could go free. "I felt the same wave of hope that washed through hearts all around the world." Didn't wash through mine. Anyway.
with one exception.
One exception, apparently. 4.5 million exceptions where I come from. And elsewhere in the same thing, he said, and this gives you his calibration on events. Let me do it this way. How would you guys tell me what really was World War One about? Where was it mostly fought, and where was most of the dying done?
Mm-hmm.
I think you'd agree with me that that would be Europe. Probably like, you know, Poppy Day and the fields of Flanders and Poland.
Oh, yeah.
And
yes. France,
all quiet on the Western Front. Mm-hmm. Unless, you know, there may be someone out there who doesn't know, but it was kind of, sort of, the Germans in the middle fighting largely the French, Germans, and later Americans and some Canadians and South Africans and so forth. The South Africans did serious dying in that war, okay, in the middle of the Battle of the Somme. In one battle, one-third of our guys came out alive.
Holy cow.
Exactly.
I did not know that.
Battle of Delville Wood is heavily commemorated, and the South Africans went in there, and they were slaughtered by the Germans. One-third of them came out alive out of that forest. The forest was gone. My grandfather did fight in the bit of the war that Obama wants to talk about. Here's what Obama thought the First World War was about. He says in his speech, "Most of Africa, including my father's homeland," he's talking about Kenya, "was under colonial rule. The dominant European powers, having ended a horrific world war just a few months after Madiba's birth, viewed this continent and its people primarily as spoils in a contest for territory and abundant natural resources and cheap labor. And the inferiority of the black race and indifference toward black culture and interests and aspirations was a given." In other words, okay, so the First World War, in his view, was about the natural resources of Africa?
Yeah, that's so far left field.
Can you even revise history to get there?
No.
You just have to make stuff up. So let's let that soak in. We have to have a little break to celebrate capitalism here, and we'll be right back with our guest, Harry Bullions. We're chatting about South Africa today.
Yeah, I got to find out why we fought the First World War. I thought it was about something else.
Nope, it's about Africa.
South Africa.
We're not myself. Cries I could not reach and caught deep inside. Words are like weapons, they wound sometimes. I didn't really mean to hurt you.
History.
Cher time traveled and wrote a song about Barack Obama's speech on Tuesday.
Yeah.
Oh my goodness. All right,
Harry, pick it up. We were
before we digress. Again.
The man is amazing. He is a historian all by himself. The First World War was all about his grandfather and Kenya. Who knew?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Surprise!
Flipped the whole world on its ear because of Africa. Yep.
Yeah. Now, I come from Africa, and I have some sort of vested interest in the truth down there, but I didn't think it was quite necessary to rewrite the entire First World War. He's presumably going to get to the Second World War in the next one.
That's next year's Mandela
speech. Harry, there's a lot more going on in Africa than you have any idea, and we're finding out about it now.
It shows you what you can achieve in life by being a community organizer and having a booming voice.
Exactly.
Anyway, so, you know, later on in that speech, he gets to another kind of subject, which we haven't really touched, but he says about what Mandela did for white people in South Africa. He says, the subjugator, that's now me, was being offered a gift, being given a chance to see a new way, being given a chance to participate in the work of building a better world. And so, let's see. So that is why his government created black economic empowerment legislation that cuts whites out of everything in life. That's why the farmers are being killed. Is that how we are being given a better chance to participate in the work of building a better world? Is it a better world when you end up like the people in those images of farm murders?
Mm-hmm.
What is this man talking about? Will somebody, somewhere, please tell me?
Yeah, where was their voice when all that was going on? They didn't have any say in this new Mandela government. They didn't.
Okay.
They were being completely isolated and exterminated.
So now I want to read you a little thing that he said in Kenya. I think it was in 2015. I think he visited there a couple of times. Let me explain it this way. Before he became president, he visited there once, and I believe it was in the 1990s. That's when he rummaged through his grandfather's stuff. That's when he went and found his roots, so to speak. Okay? But that was predated by being inspired by Nelson Mandela. So here's this kid who grows up in Hawaii and Indonesia and then ends up in California. He's at the most impressionable age, just coming out of school. He wants to do all the good in the world. And what does he do? He hears about Nelson Mandela, and the first speech he ever gives in public is at Occidental College, and it's about sanctions against South Africa. So the guy you elected to president, his first ever public speech was about South Africa, just so you know.
Mm-hmm. Wow.
Okay?
Interesting.
But back in Hawaii, his childhood friend would later say, and I think, where is that? I think that is in USA Today of 6 December 2013. This friend of his said, Keith Kakugawa, said about Obama, he made everything out like it was racial.
Wow.
Made everything out like it was racial.
Which explains the state of things now.
So I wrote to you, Aaron, and it's worth repeating. He may well have been physically born in Hawaii on 4 August 1961, but his formative post-teen birth was based on events in South Africa. After finishing school in the late 1970s, he was inspired while at Occidental College by Mandela, and in his own words, inspired to re-examine his own priorities. Okay? And he said that at the speech the other day in South Africa, he was inspired by Mandela to re-examine his own priorities. Now, by contrast, at the exact same time, I was inspired by a visiting American Democrat who was a wonderful ambassador for his country, okay? And George is a personal friend, family friend to this day. He's the longest-standing friend of my life, and I view him as my mentor. And we fight all the time about Republicans and Democrats, and George is a devout Democrat, okay? But he couldn't see his way open to support Hillary in the end.
There's hope.
It's a lot of that going around.
Well, I don't know how he voted, but I'd better not repeat what he said about Hillary. So it's over that period that Obama changed his name from Barry to Barack. And for those interested, really, they can just go to Google and put in, quote, Barry to Barack, unquote. Just stick that into Google and see what you get. It's a fantastic article, very well researched. Okay, not by me. Other people do good work. And in 27 June 2013, in Senegal in Africa, he said that his, quote, first act of political activism was because I was inspired by what was taking place in South Africa. USA Today, 6 December 2013. In his first presidential visit to Kenya, he said about his first original visit. In other words, it's now later in 2013, and he's talking about his first visit to Kenya in the 1990s. And he said he got to the airport, and some lady looked at him and then told him, are you perhaps related to Barack Obama? So she mentioned his father's name. And he said, this was the first time that his name had meant something. Think about that. That was the first time that his name had meant something. So here's this kid. He's got a white mother. He's got a black father he's hardly ever seen. He's in Hawaii. Then he goes to Indonesia. Both, as you can see, great preparation for flyover country. Sorry for my sarcasm. I keep getting told don't ever do that with Americans.
We like sarcasm.
We live on sarcasm and irony in South Africa. You have to. When all the garbage happens to you, you develop irony and sarcasm in your humor.
Well, we live in California, it's a staple for us as well.
Okay, here you go. So, finally, he decides, hang on, I've heard this Mandela guy in South Africa. This speaks to me in a way that nothing's ever spoken to me. And then in 1990s, he flies out to Kenya. He goes and does his Arthur Haley Roots thing. Okay, that book was rubbish, by the way. We can make that the subject of another time. But the first time I opened the first couple of pages, I laughed my head off and threw it down. Maybe it's got something to do with being born in Africa. You just look at life.
You can spot a fiction when you see one.
I can spot a fiction and a BS story a million miles away. It just annoys me that I have to live through it. He finally goes to Kenya, and on landing at the airport, for the first time, his name means something. You put all of that together, this is a man who fundamentally feels validated by Africa.
Yeah.
No good talking to him about West Virginia and coal mines. You got me?
Right, right.
Yeah, that's a great point.
No solidarity with the actual American citizen.
Yeah, you don't
we
have
felt
to.
That.
Don't bother speaking to him about farmers' land rights in Nevada or Montana, for that matter.
Yeah, okay. True.
He doesn't relate. His concept of America is Occidental College and community leadership in Chicago. Okay?
And Mandela, that, who, I just was looking at your link to Mandela singing Kill the Whites. Well, there's another terrific role model.
So my problem is that he's inspired by a guy at that time about whom I'm not sure that there is another human being on earth about whom so many lies have been perpetrated with such effect and efficiency. I have never come across anything like this in my life. So let us just, because I've never done this with you, let me just give you a couple of quotes here from Mandela's own book.
All right, hold that thought. Let's not break this up. I'm going to have that all in one thing. Take a really quick break. We're going to come back.
Okay.
Because people do need to know who Mandela was. They're still, besides the fact they don't know Africa has countries, I mean, they think Mandela was a great guy. So,
yeah.
He wasn't great for his own people.
There are many great Africans, but Mandela's not one of them.
Yeah, he wasn't one of them. Exactly. Our guest is Harry Bouillons. We'll be right back. You're listening to We the People. Join us online, wethepeopleradio.us.
Find little pink houses in all 57 states.
Said Barack Obama.
Said Barack Obama.
All right, back to Nelson Mandela.
Okay, so the reason we're on Nelson Mandela is because we have now determined in Obama's own words, repeatedly, that he was inspired by Nelson Mandela. The sequence of events is that here's this kid of a somewhat confused upbringing, having been fatherless for most of the time. He'd gone from Hawaii to Indonesia and then to the coast of California at LA, at Occidental College. And finally, there is a light that he picks up somewhere in his own personal darkness, and that light is Mandela. And that he is much inspired by. He then goes to Kenya, where he goes and digs for his roots, finds his grandfather's struggles with the British, etc. Now he is a man truly wallowing in African colonial history and the freedom from colonialism and all that kind of stuff. For Americans at the time, the only thing they knew about it was, what was it, Commander Uhura on Star Trek? That was about the only effect of Uhuru, which is the word freedom in Swahili.
Oh.
Okay, so that's why it was chosen.
I did not know that.
Okay, so there you go. You
Star Trek,
something
guy.
Useful today. Okay. So America's experience of all of this bloodshed and stuff that everybody else is struggling with and dying by the thousands is the naming of a fictitious character in a TV series.
Yeah.
Okay.
Well, at that time, Mandela, I mean, what we were being fed was that Mandela was a freedom fighter who was imprisoned by South Africa and...
totally unfairly. He had done absolutely nothing.
Oh, yeah. And they had to let him go because of apartheid, you know, was bad. And he really had all the answers, and he came out a hero.
Yeah, apartheid was bad. But it's also the period over which the economy grew terrifically and black people made the greatest economic advances. But one's not allowed to say that because facts are not allowed to intrude while we're wallowing in that.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so let's go. Instead of asking all kinds of people what they think of Mandela, why don't people read his book? I stood at that conference in Spokane the other day, and I held up Mandela's book in my left hand, and I held up my own in my right hand. And if folks read the little blog article that Aaron has posted, they will understand the context of all of it. That was the moment that I held up the two books, and I said, in the inimitable words of your president, mine is bigger.
God love him.
Anyway, so and that got their attention. The fact is, I'd actually read the book. And I think most people that I know who want to wallow in this self-assumed air of wonderment that they have around Mandela, they probably have a copy of the book which they framed somewhere and they pointed out to their liberal friends. I wonder if anyone's read it. Because if they were to read it, they would find on page 320 to 324, he describes, he says, the Communist Party had secretly reconstituted itself underground and was now considering forming its own military wing. We decided, that's now the ANC, his party, we decided I should raise the issue of the armed struggle with the working committee. And I did so in a meeting of June 61. I was raising the issue of violence so soon after the treason trial, where we had contended that for the ANC, non-violence was the inviolate principle, not a tactic to be changed when conditions warranted. I myself, now in other words, the ANC defended itself in court by saying it's a non-violent organization. Then he says, I myself believe precisely the opposite, that non-violence was a tactic that should be abandoned when it no longer worked. At the meeting, I argued that the state had given us no alternative to violence. The chief, this is Albert Luthuli, who was about to receive the Nobel Peace Prize, I'll have you know, initially resisted my arguments. For him, nonviolence was not simply a tactic. But we worked on him the whole night, and he ultimately agreed that a military campaign was inevitable. After that, Luthuli got the Nobel Prize. Now, those last words are mine, not Mandela's. I want to be careful about that. So then we can go further down on the same page, 323. Towards dawn, there was a resolution. The Congress authorized me to go ahead and form a new military organization separate from the ANC, to which I, Harry, would respond, sure, but they were all members of both organizations, for crying out loud.
Sure.
Page 325. I, who had never been a soldier, this is Mandela, I, who had never been a soldier, who had never fought in a battle, who had never fired a gun at an enemy, had been given the task of starting an army. The name of the new organization was Umkhonto weSizwe, Spear of the Nation, or MK for short. Okay. Page 333. I was joined at the farm by Raymond Mhlaba, who had journeyed up from Port Elizabeth. That's my, Harry's, hometown. The first ANC leader to be arrested in the Defiance Campaign. The Defiance Campaign was supposed to be a peaceful exercise, but ended up with a white nun being killed, hacked to death, and then her flesh eaten by the people who had killed her. And the people were actually jailed for cannibalism. Very peaceful, I'll have you know.
Right.
It sounds like it.
You forgive us, please, for being so ironic in the way we look at things and sarcastic.
You have to.
You find the Russians are the same. All nations who have suffered go like this. It's a psychological defense mechanism.
Well, you can't actually have that kind of humor if you're not smart. So, bottom line is, it doesn't matter what your nationality is. If you can have that sort of humor and understand it, it means you're smart enough to know that you're joking and what you're joking about.
I'll work on that.
So, for all the people who don't find it funny, you're all dummies. I guess that's basically what I was saying. Let's just be clear.
Yeah, how to win friends in a pacified
age.
Okay, page 336.
I'm drawing fire from you.
Yeah.
Here's Mandela, his own words, page 336 of his own book that everybody has and no one reads. If sabotage did not produce the results we wanted, we were prepared to move on to the next stage, guerrilla warfare and terrorism. Can I please repeat the word terrorism here? That's me, Harry.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Okay. Page 337. Our recruits were ANC members who were active in the local branches. He's referring to the recruits for the military wing now. So what's with this thing about two separate organizations? It's all the same guys.
Right.
Yeah, all ANC.
Okay. And then page 337. Chief Luthuli had been awarded the Nobel Prize at a ceremony in Oslo, just before the next step. So, yeah, I just want to rub in the fact that this is what the West does. These guys are planning a complete overthrow of a government, and back in Norway, they're giving this guy the Peace Prize, right? But that's since then, yeah, that's the case that started the rot. And since then, it's just rotted more. Page 338. On the orders of the MK High Command, that means himself as appointed leader, in the early hours of 16 December, the day white South Africa used to celebrate as Dingaan's Day, and it's my damn birthday to boot, homemade bombs were exploded at electrical power stations, government offices in Johannesburg, Durban, and, as always, my hometown of Port Elizabeth, which was an ANC hotspot. Okay, so I'd like you to understand why it is Mandela went to jail. He went to jail because he and his friends plotted the overthrow of the state via invasion of foreign forces using some form of vessel landing, which could only have meant U-boat. And I know only one Communist Party with suitable U-boats at the time, and that would be the Soviet Union. Though they never said that on the paperwork. They were caught red-handed with the paperwork.
No pun intended.
No pun intended. And then he describes how he visits Botswana, Tanzania, which I referred to before, Ethiopia, Ghana. And then he went to Tunisia, where he solicited training and weapons, and training in weapons, and got it. Okay? And then he went back to Ethiopia for 6 months of military training. This is the hero that everybody's talking about.
Sounds peaceful to me.
What could go wrong?
Where's the confusion?
From Khartoum, I went to Dar es Salaam, where I greeted the first group of recruits who were headed for Ethiopia to train as soldiers. And so it keeps carrying on, he says in 617, this is where it affects me directly. MK's first car bomb attack took place in May 1983. Actually, he's got that wrong. It was 20 May. And it was specifically timed to go off in the rush hour. He says, took place May 1983. 19 people were killed and more than 200 injured. Many of them maimed for life, by the way. Oh. And he writes, I knew that such accidents were the inevitable consequence of the decision to embark on a military struggle.
Accidents?
Yeah, so this quote, accident, being the timing of the bomb for the rush hour, no doubt. Now, I had quite a bit to do with and in that particular building. I have a friend here now in Vancouver who fell flat in an office across the road when her windows imploded. Okay? Our own building 10 kilometers away shook. We all knew instantly it was a bomb. It was mostly black people who were killed and injured. There were some ladies, some white ladies, and two Air Force officers who were killed. Hardly a military success, but it's certainly effective terrorism. Now, I got to ask you, man of peace?
Yeah, yeah, right.
You've got to be kidding me.
Yeah, he's a role model. We got to take a break, but let's pick this right up on the other side. Because this kind of shows you who he really was and why he was in prison.
Yeah.
It just wasn't publicized at the time he was released that, it was all big mistakes. So let's pick that up.
Yes, because people still don't know these things. You can find all the archives for the shows and the previous shows with Harry Bouyans at wethepeopleradio.us, and we'll be right back. Okay, so we've got just slightly over 10 minutes.
Okay. So
we're going to leave it up to you because...
Fair enough.
Yeah.
So the last little bit about Mandela is, and I think this is important for you to hear. So along the way, his operation authorizes the bombing of my own mother's apartment building. And a number of white ladies and white children are killed down in the supermarket where they place the bomb. His ANC that now runs the country has now named the street past the supermarket after the bomber. Do you understand that?
Wow.
That is what people live with in South Africa. The folks whose family died in that bomb, they now have to go and look at where their family die and see the street named after the guy who did it.
Wow.
Okay. Then, so, eventually, and it goes from outrage to outrage, when Mandela finally came to power, here's what he did. He appointed as police commissioner none other than the confessed and convicted planter of a bomb at Magoo's Bar in Durban that killed a number of people, ordinary civilians. Okay? So Mandela, his organization, the ANC, appointed that man as police commissioner. If this is the man that inspired President Obama, why are you guys surprised?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Well, look at the people he hung out with. I mean, there were a lot of us who did some homework before he got into office, and certainly did a great deal of homework before he was elected the second time. And he hung out with some really bad people.
Now I'm going.
I mean, he likes bombers too. You know, look at Bill Ayers.
Exactly.
Big thing for that guy.
And so, I want to now take you to a very strange place. I want to take you to the. At that point, it is the Danube, and we're on a riverboat. Finally saved up enough money for me and my wife to go do this river cruise thing in Europe. You should do it once in your life and then never again. Well, look, you know, I guess I hang in a general Republican direction, even though I'm not an American. But 2 weeks on one boat with an audience that is largely American Republicans can get to be too much.
any time it's only one thing, it's not very fun. Yeah,
I'm going to tell you this. There was one lady on that boat. I think I've mentioned before that I could never get a single evening meal without somebody doing the following. I would sit down with my wife. The person on the other side would say, "So where are you folks from?" And we'd say, "Oh, Vancouver, Canada." And then there'd be a polite silence followed by, "You don't sound Canadian." And then we'd say, "That's because we were born in South Africa." And then there'd be another polite silence. And the next sentence would be, "What do you think of Obama?" That was it. That was a conversation. Every time. It got so bad that my wife asked me to go write down a little slip of paper to just give to people and tell them, "Please don't speak. Just read that book."
You didn't just start lying about where you came from.
You know, it's just that we couldn't get food anymore without going through that ritual. But there was one person who broke the mold. And that was a lady, I won't mention her name, from Virginia, and she was what you guys would call a hog farmer, okay?
Okay.
And she'd obviously saved up for her trip on the boat, and she would find me every now and then. And on this one occasion, she plonked herself down right next to me, just after I'd been through this ritual for the how manyth time, and she said into my left ear, "I don't care where he was born. He's not American." Okay, now, she hadn't prefaced that with anything else, so I was left having to conclude she is referring to who was the guy that was then the president, namely Obama. Okay, so my life became just one walking tribulation of what do I think of Obama and how he's not American and. So I told a chap that was from, for heaven's sake, go up along the coast from Massachusetts for me, please.
You can go to Maine.
New Hampshire. Vermont's not on the coast, ma'am.
No, I know. But if you go north, you're going to hit some of those.
New Hampshire. This gentleman, very nice gentleman, Democrat.
And Vermont's
lovely. There was one. So I walked down back to my stateroom. I couldn't take it anymore. At that point, I found him on the staircase, and I told him, "You know, I think your countrymen want to hang your president from the yardarm. And I don't really like the guy, but I feel like I have to defend him at this point." And so this gentleman said, "Harry, you do that and they'll string you up as well." That was the moment I kind of realized that Americans sensed any red-blooded, particularly American male, could feel something was off. If he was ignoring the facts and things, they sensed something just wasn't right about all of this. Well, they didn't have the background to know why their instincts were telling them this. I've just given you the background, okay? Trust your instincts, okay? This guy is all wrong for your country. He came with a calibration that is all Kenya and Mandela, South Africa, and he tried to turn your country into South Africa. If you don't see the parallels by now, then I have wasted 4 sessions on the air with you, because I have not managed to put across the reality yet.
Well, you know, the thing is, for somebody who would dispute all of this, just look at where race relations were in the United States before Obama was president, and look at where they were once he was out of office.
They weren't great before Obama.
Perfect, but that wasn't the goal.
I think it was going in the right direction, and when he took office, I truly believe they got so much worse.
They did get worse. They got infinitely worse, and it was some distance into his second term that I told anybody who would listen, watch how this is going to boil over as his guys, because he has guys, as his guys try to suck everything out of the system that they can before his clock is up. Okay, and that's exactly what they did.
Well, and it's the same, as you have handily pointed out, it's the same politics of division that you see in South Africa. It's the same mentality. It's the same thing. That it's not that we should all get along, or that we should not, that you shouldn't discriminate against somebody or the other. It's, oh, yes, you should discriminate, but it's against non-blacks, I guess, whites specifically. And it's kind of the same thing. It's exactly the same thing that's going on in South Africa, without obviously the, you know, the farm murders and all that. But if you look at what's being said and what's being promoted by groups that Obama either started, likes, supports, same stuff.
Everything he touched, he Africanized. So it's important for you to understand that it's not communism in the sense that you understand Russia and China. This is African socialism, Africa style. Whatever he touched in the United States, he started turning it into the African equivalent with all that goes with it. Why are folks surprised at what the FBI has become? I don't understand why they're surprised.
Yeah.
It's part of the show. It's part of what happened here.
Well, there was so much more. He was so much more, I guess, there were so many more accomplices in his story, too, as far as the media. I mean, he had free run.
But everything was shut down. No dissension was allowed. Our freedoms of speech were basically suspended because it was all race politics. And so you couldn't say anything.
And what continent do you think that thing of shutting everything else down comes from? It's a little bit like, I forget now which Central African country it is, where the local radio station, government controlled, basically announced that their president is God with power over life and death, and it really doesn't matter what he does because he has total power, so shut up.
That's comforting.
Wow. Yeah,
as long as we're going to be fair about it, you know.
Yeah, at least we know where he stands, you know.
So all of this was packaged into language that Americans would understand, language that particularly more youthful Americans would understand, language that in particular his female white voting base would understand. Okay, and that is why it scared me so much when, you know, a white American lady stood in my own doorway, in my own house, and told me, "We're all in love with him." I'd seen that before. I saw white little young teenage girls faint when they touched Mandela's shit. And I saw the same with Obama, and I thought, oh, heaven help us all.
Yeah.
Yeah,
yep,
you know.
And that's where it went.
It did turn into be almost, kind of a
And now those people are suffering withdrawal, and they're falling on their knees in the street and screaming their heads off on YouTube, etc., because they haven't known anything. I have some sympathy for them. You know, they were fifth graders when he became president, yeah, and they were leaving school when
true.
He lost the job. They've never known anything else. They got 8 years of calibration of this garbage.
Yeah.
Yeah. And it hasn't helped us any, I have to say. Well, yet another incredibly informative session with you.
Yeah.
Ran into a lady the other day real quickly, and she's from South Africa, and she was surprised and kind of happy that people here were actually talking about the actual issues down there.
Yeah, this
she
was...
said people just don't know anything about it. You know what? We know that now.
Yep. Once again, a great show. Thank you very much for
coming on. We'll do this. We'll do this some more. We really appreciate your specific insight on this latest Obama thing. And please keep sending me things so I can post them.
Thanks for having me.
Absolutely. Our guest has been Harry Bouyans, and got more for you if you can get on to WeThePeopleRadio.us. We've got other shows previous to that, and I hope you listen to all of them. It's really, really important that you understand the issues in South Africa. See you next week. We'll